Yeah.
Order filled. Check us out.
I know what time it is.
This is Mighty Soldiers exclusive.
Yeah. Let's get it. Let's get it.
What's up, guys? Andy with Mighty Soldiers Trades. Tonight, I am super excited to bring on legendary trader Tom Basso, featured in both Jack Swagger's Market Wizards and Michael Covell's Trend Following Mindset. And I'm not even going to waste your time or waste Tom's time. We're going to get him on here. How you doing tonight, Tom?
Doing great.
Well, I'm really happy to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us. This is a huge honor for me. And we do have some questions that were sent in that I'll get into a little bit later. I'm just going to start with your book, if you don't mind.
Sure.
What is an all-weather trader? And can you give an example in your career that created and turned you into this all-weather trader?
Well, all-weather is a term that I've used to describe dealing with all sorts of conditions. You know, it could be sunny out, it could be rainy, it could be snowing, it could be a tornado. If you're in a trading sense of things, you got up markets, down markets, and sideways markets. And all weather is, you're able to deal with all of them. You're not just looking to be long only. And then when a bear market runs along, you lose 30, 50% of your money, whatever. So all weather is actually doing that. And the key thing that happened to me, I guess, was when I started out as a long only stock manager way, way, way back, this would have been about 1980 or so. What I felt like, you know, when I did research on what would happen in a bear market, long stocks would get killed. And I thought, this is a weird way to run a business. You're paying salaries, your lease expense and all that. You're managing other people's monies. And you know, there's this glaring risk that you're about to face sooner or later. And when you do, your business, I mean, how can you keep your employees salaried and all this stuff? So I started getting into commodity futures and the extreme diversification of that. And then later on in stock index futures, where you could actually have a situation where you could create a hedge. You know, you're long on stocks one way, you're short on a index future the other way. And by doing that, you've created this part of your portfolio that's, no matter what happens, you're just sitting there neutral. And if you have stocks with good alpha and, you know, they're going to exceed the market's performance and you take out the market, then you're just picking up that pure alpha from your stocks and you can have a bear market all day long and you'd be sitting there smiling.
I considered myself an all-weather trader of sorts, but found that for every give, there's a take. And the take for me was that I didn't have enough conviction behind my trades in a market that was an expert at throwing surprises.
Yeah. I've seen a few surprises over the years. These are gray hairs.
Yeah, I was going both long and short. I was really overdoing it. Something that you had touched on that I've seen several times before is there's the traders that they're too scared to push the button, right? They're too scared to execute. And then there's the trader that's just willing to jump into just about anything. Well, I was the trader that was willing to jump into just about anything until I really got myself into more stressful situations that made it to where when I came to my desk, I was having residual stress. I was having it to where, you know, I was having to do breathing exercises and stuff to get myself in the zone for trading. And it was strange because, you know, I had showed up to the desk called him as a cucumber every day. And then all of a sudden, when I wasn't even thinking that I was stressed at all, here I was, you know, having this sort of build up. And it was clouding my judgment. And then I was executing bad trades by it. Has there been a time in your trading that you can remember that you would say that you were outside of the realm of a good trader, that you were more gambling or you just really risky?
When I started out, I had no clue what I was doing. Just like almost everything in life, you know, a baby is born with very little knowledge of what lies ahead. And you start learning from there. And in terms of the military, this is a good analogy. You don't become special forces or something without a heck of a lot of trading. There's all sorts of techniques and procedures and various quantifiable advantages that you can learn so that you can use them should you need them. And in the case of trading, it's the same thing. You start out and I don't think I was ever a gambler, but I was trying to put together at first stock strategies, and then later on in futures and hedging and selling option spreads and all these other things, you know, and each one requires a learning curve a little bit, and you end up having to deal with the mental side a lot in trading and in, you know, what you did. You really have to be aware of that pressure on you, be aware of the potential stressors, come up with solutions. For me, it was observing myself from sort of a, like, instead of me being a trader, watch Tom trade. It'd be that kind of mentality. And so it's sort of like watching the movie of your life, and you're in every scene because it's your movie, but you're watching it from a distance. And it helps me to be able to just execute without a whole lot of emotion.
I find that, for example, Peter Robbins, Steve Joseph Burns, traders like yourself, the things that you guys all say, I heard it when I first started, but I didn't want to submit to it. You know, I wanted to do it my way and just keep pushing it my way. And slowly but surely, these things, it just comes to a point where you either have to or you have to just stop doing it, you know? But one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, there was a time that I was more focused recently on trading both long and short. And instead of focusing on my entries, I was focusing on taking profit in the exit rather than the entries. Have you ever found that that's a strategy or something that you use, that the exit was more important or equally important as the overall plan and the entry?
Well, the way I look at it is, a complete trading strategy has got to have some sort of a buy sell trigger or engine, I call it. Engine, because an engine moves the car, a buy sell engine moves the trader. It's the action of buying or selling. So you need something like that. You need a way, if you're in stocks, you need a way of screening stocks. You need a way of ranking whatever comes out of the screening. So you got to have some criteria there. More important than anything I just mentioned probably would be position sizing. If you can't size your positions properly, you'll be too high in your amounts one time, and then the next time you'll have not enough, and your lack of conviction or your enthusiasm might help drive that position sizing, and you'll have very, very erratic performance over time. Statistically speaking, I've studied it. Then the last part of the complete trading strategy is your mental. You got to have everything in place. What does it take for you to be able to flawlessly execute the trading strategy that you've figured out that you want to do? I'm not a fan of making it up on the fly. It's a dangerous way to be going into battle without a battle plan or something. It doesn't make sense to me. I'd rather have at least a plan, and then when the markets throw you a wrinkle that you weren't anticipating, you have backup plans. You have plan B, plan C. If the internet goes down, what do I do? If my computer fails, I got to go to my backup computer. If my monitor fails, I have a backup. So there's a lot of thought goes into getting everything right so that you're ready to go. You're mentally prepared. And I think that that gives you a complete trading strategy. So entries and exits are both part of that first part I mentioned, which is the buy-sell engine. I think you have to have a logical way of separating noise from information, because there's lots and lots of noise in the markets. And I think at some point you realize that a market has gone far enough. It's now in an uptrend or a downtrend, and you should take action. So your buy-sell indicator kicks over and gives you a trade, and you must take it. And with proper position sizing and everything else in place, you'll be a successful trader.
Yeah. So for me, I would love to ask you about your trading checklist, but for me, one of the things I ask myself is there overall structure, you know, so it could be a chart pattern or whatever I'm looking for that has that overall structure that I'm familiar with, and however price is defining this for me. But then after I find this structure, I want to ask myself of all the possible scenarios that I know of from sitting here at this desk for as many hours as I have. And when I run through these scenarios, it's really important, and I find more as time goes on, it's really important for me to sort of work my way through the downside first, the risk first, the loss first, like accept that loss before I even execute the trade. Is this similar to the way that you look at it?
Yeah. Statistically speaking, over my entire life, I'm guessing I'm somewhere around 33% reliable on my trades, which means that two out of every three trades I've done in my lifetime were losers. So that's a pretty high probability. And so I approach everything from the risk standpoint and I attack that risk. So putting stop losses is important. Having an indicator that gets you out of something at a known price and having that feed into the position sizing. So if I have a lot of risk on a trade, I'm going to size it automatically smaller. If I have lower risk, I'm going to automatically size it bigger, larger in size. And I think that's sort of critical to managing and attacking your risk. And I think that if you don't do that and you're just concentrating on trying to do profitable trades, and you're going to be two-thirds of the time a loser, that's pretty mentally defeating. It's, you start feeling like you're getting beat up all the time. And by the way, if it's two out of three trades, that's just on average. You could have six or seven in a row that are losers. And then that hits you and you start questioning yourself. And there's lots of ways that the mental side can go bad there.
So you're saying that your overall process is protecting your emotional capital.
Yep.
You're not focusing on whether this trade wins or loses. You don't really care. It's the overall plan.
I have this phrase that I keep repeating over and over again, and people have heard me use it a lot of times. I'm worried about my next 1,000 trades. And when you think of trying to get a statistical sample of 1,000 trades, even though I'm trading, you know, like 26 futures markets and 30 ETFs and all that stuff, I have a lot of potential to get to 1,000 quicker than maybe the average person would. But it still is a daunting task to think of, you know, you got this one trade that you're concerning yourself with right at this moment, but it's just one of the next 1,000. And it just diminishes that trade into just one more data point. And it takes a lot of the pressure off.
One of the wisest things that I hear on social media and wherever is that traders, the one thing we cannot do is we cannot accept large losses. Large losses are the destroyer of traders.
Yeah, and they hurt bad.
And that brings me to my next question. Do you have any tips and tricks that you've used to successfully trade this bear market?
When you're in a bear market, first of all, there's no reason why you can't think about shorting. There's ways of setting up option strategies that are fairly conservative that would exploit a bear market. There's also ways of setting it up so that they exploit sideways markets, which, you know, a bear market may have a number of periods that go sideways as well. I think what I do also is I see when I'm having a bear market in stocks, I look over, you know, at orange juice making new highs or all these other things in my portfolio, and you realize there's a world of markets out there. Currencies go all over the place. Bonds clearly have had a downturn with the Fed for quite a while, and now they're on a little bit of an upswing, and we'll see. Interest rates this morning on short-term money was fairly significantly high. If that starts coming down, you're going to be off to the races with the bond market again. So there's just lots of opportunity out there, and I would encourage all traders to kind of open up their mind to not just being a long-only stock trader, which a lot of people, you know, back 3 years ago, we had the COVID thing, and then they were chucking out money from the government, and a lot of young kids just took up stock market trading and made themselves tens and 20s and 30s of thousands of dollars, and they think they're rocket scientists now. They think they're just absolutely smart, and they've never experienced a bad bear market. They've never seen extended sideways. They haven't suffered through a 50% drawdown. Man, they got a lot to learn, and hopefully some of the advice that I throw out there gets them to step back from their overenthusiasm and get a little sense of reality in there.
I was just looking at the market and I was thinking, there is that possibility that for the next 5 years, we could just trade flat in a range. And like you said, there's always an opportunity out there no matter what market we're in. And when I started off in penny stocks. I was believing all the guru hype and I learned everything the hard way. It was fun. I love it.
Well, but, you know, go back to the depression and think about that. You got a world that's upside down financially speaking. I mean, most countries are theoretically bankrupt. And what if a cascade of whatever event triggered it, but it cascades into some kind of financial debacle, and you end up just ripping stocks for 50 to 80% down, and it might not get back to break even for a decade. If you wanted to write a fictional story and have the main characters be traders or something, you could easily write that story.
I noticed that you had said that in your data, trend following did not work as well when there was low volatility. Is that correct?
Yes. When, as all traders have to do, you say buy low, sell high, or you buy high, sell higher, or whatever, but there's got to be movement. The part of that statement is you're buying it at one price and selling it at another. The more movement and volatility you have, the bigger the potential for profit, no matter what kind of style trader you are.
And if you don't mind, I find that there are times on a chart that I shouldn't be trading at all. And it seems like if it's in the middle of the day, say 1:30, you know, and the volume's not really there, that right. I could go long or short, and this thing's going to move just enough to maybe make me uncomfortable. So I really have to wait for an A-plus solid setup. And that's one of the things that I really like that you had pointed out, that everything has to be, I don't remember the way you said it, but it has to be an excellent A-plus setup. You can't just, there's no point in showing up here unless we're going to execute the very best plan we can.
Right. Yeah, I think you're trying to come up with a strategy that works for you. And if that strategy involves having sufficient volatility so that it feeds your profits, maybe you check volatility in the morning when you get in, and when you see a market that's dead, you go out and play golf or something, do something different. You don't need to sit there wasting your time in front of a computer. I think what happens with a lot of people is they get tied to the desk. They've labeled themselves as a trader, and traders are supposed to sit there in front of that screen and watch all the action. And it's sort of like they invent things to do, most of them bad things to do. And they should just be, you know, like saying, okay, I'm going to turn this off and go take a Spanish lesson, or I'm going to go, you know, read this contract that just showed up on my desk that I got to read, or, you know, go fix some stuff on the website that's not working, or any one of a million other things I could be doing that whole lot more productive than sitting there and watching nothing happening.
Yeah. The only problem with that is I got hurt, like I told you, and basically things got tough for me for a while. Yeah. And I had everything, like I had a lot of people reaching out and a lot of opportunities. And I had to, at that point for my health, I had to just pull back. And when I did, I moved to Florida right about the same time, and I started walking the beach every day.
There you
and
go.
It is very hard when you're walking the beach every day to pull yourself back to this desk and sit here, you know, for long periods of time when it's so easy to go do that. But when I sit here for extended periods of time and I can have a really good day in the morning, I find that I trade best. And if I'm trading the overall market like the SPY or something, it varies depending on what I'm trading. Getting away from the desk is important because those days that I push it, I'm just giving back profit.
Well, and sometimes you'll have some of your best ideas when you're out watching the waves coming in or something. And you'll all of a sudden say, hey, that's how I can solve that problem. Or I could create an indicator that looks like that. And that would actually mathematically measure what I'm trying to look for in a setup. And now I can just relegate it to a computer. A computer can look through 1,000 issues and tell me the top 5 setups, and I don't have to do all this work myself. There's just a lot of things that'll come to you when you're away. If you're sitting there just focused on every little bar going up and down, or candle, if you use candlesticks, I mean, it hits your consciousness and it just sucks all your strategic thinking right out the door. And it's sad because that's where you do your best work and where you set yourself up to become a successful trader over a long run.
Yeah, I got really lucky. My whole family, they enjoy all this. So I can talk to them about this every day, all day long, and they have no problem with that. And most of my journaling is done mentally on the trails or on the beach. From the start, if I had something going wrong, or, you know, well, obviously it's going wrong. Whatever happens though, me and my wife, we would just go and we would meditate on that. And we would talk about what we can do to come back and do a better job next time.
Sure.
And my biggest problem was that I knew exactly what to do next time, but I didn't push myself hard enough in the discipline category. I need to be, even now, a lot more serious about the discipline category and just making sure that I'm, you know, yeah, anyways, pushing
that. Discipline is a combination of a couple of things in my mind. The first thing you have to do with discipline, and I was fortunate to have this happen to me in my 20s, and now I'm 70, so it was 50 years ago. By being aware of what's going on with you. So it's again, this like you're watching yourself trade or you're watching yourself do something. If you can take that kind of attitude, all of a sudden you get a little disassociated from the actual locked on trading mind. And that allows you with that awareness to be able to tell whether or not you're deviating from your strategic trading plan. Now, so being aware and then realizing that you're not on the plan anymore can allow you the ability to be disciplined and put yourself back on the plan. So it's a combination of awareness and confidence and being able to have a plan that you can tell yourself whether you're off of the plan or not. Some people don't have much of a plan. They kind of make it up on the fly. Well, then it's really hard to be disciplined because you're going to be all over the map.
Right, exactly. I had noticed you had commented on Peter Robbins' post. Peter Robbins said there are successful traders that counter trend trade, but that is still a trend. Laugh out loud. And then you said that you tend to do that on a rare occasion when sitting in your office doing something all day and day trade for experimental purposes. It can appear counter trend, but I'm really just riding very short term trends in that case.
Yep, exactly. And so I've got trend following models. I measure overbought, oversold conditions. I have two screens, one that I'm doing my work, I'm writing the book, or I'm doing contracts or whatever I'm up to, that remodeling a house. So I'm doing electrical drawings lately on the CAD CAM. So that's on my working computer. And over here on my left side, I got a big screen and it's got my trader platform up there. And all I do is jump in on a short-term trend, liquidate about two-thirds of the position when I get to a 1R gain. So if I've got a potential loss of 1R, I look for a 1R gain, knock out two-thirds of the position. Now I'm at break-even or a slight profit, no matter what happens for the rest. And then just let the rest go and trend follow it, move the stops when I can. I use 5-minute bars to do it, and it's easy to do. And usually when I'm sitting here, I can pick up another few thousand dollars or something to help pay for me having the pain of having to sit here in front of the computer all day, which I don't love to do, but you have to do sometimes in my life. There's just no choice.
Yeah, this basically, I believe that you just answered one of our questions. My friend Gianni DiPolce said, you know, the questions along time horizons, and like when you're in a long-term bull trend, but short-term downtrend, and how do you reconcile that with the trend following strategy?
Well, I think in every time period, there's trends. And the trends get, I think they're a little bit more confined when you're operating on a short-term basis. Long-term basis, you could get economic growth periods that might last years and years and years. So I pretty much have four different time periods that I seem to lean towards. One of them is sort of the 5-minute bars, doing stuff on a very, very short-term basis. And there's still trends there, but let's face it, you know, if you're day trading, you're going to run out a day. You know, it gets to the afternoon there and it's getting late and you're looking at the clock and it's only a half an hour to close. Well, I'm not going to put on new trades when I know I've got to close everything down in about 20 minutes or something. So half an hour and in, no new trades. You get to the daily type of time frames and you want to be short term. I like the 9-day for some of my indicators. There's no math behind it. There's no study that came out with 9 being the best. It just seemed like it's a little less than 2 weeks to me of trading days. It feels about the right amount of speed in terms of sensitivity, the indicators. So 9 days. Then I move up to the 21-day period. That's about 1 month of trading days. You get rid of the holidays and weekends and you're right around 21. So I use 21 for those indicators. I'm looking for that. And then when I get into bull markets and I'm looking at timing things like sector ETFs, I go all the way out to 50-day stops so that I give it some room to move. And ignore a lot of the small gyrations that my 9 day would get to. So what ends up happening is you could easily have a situation where you're long, you know, on a sector allocation program, and I'm short the hedges on a different time period, and then I'm gone short in my 9 day timing of the NASDAQ composites. So there's, and then I could be long day trading. I could have four different things going in two different directions, and it happens all the time. But if you get all of those lined up the same way, that kind of gets interesting, because now you can really, all your different allocations are going one direction. And as long as you're correct on that direction and the wind's at your back, that can get very profitable.
Do you feel more comfortable increasing your risk when you have full time frame continuity like that?
Nope. I do the same risk no matter what happens in the markets. Every day, it could be COVID crash. It could be the COVID recovery after that. It could be this recent bear market. I'm still running the same exact indicators, the same exact risk allocations. What happens is when the markets get quiet, though, my allocations start getting larger. So before the market breaks out and goes crazy and becomes emotional and everybody's getting very speculative and excited about it, I'm in that quiet period putting on fairly substantial positions. It might look to somebody like I'm somehow confident that we're going to have the next bull move or something like that. All I'm doing is saying that the risk on the trade is small. So when I get risk levels like this, I smaller positions. When I got risk levels like that, I put larger positions. But it feeds the psychology cycles in the market, in that when nobody cares, that is when you really want to be loading up more. And when everybody is on board and the trend is very apparent and it's already gone on for weeks or months, well, there's not, you know, you're somewhere near the end maybe of that trade. There you should be having smaller and smaller position sizes, because there's no surprise here and you're running out of potential for return to risk.
Yeah, I find that trading for me, it's never just a straight line. Sometimes it's really great, and then it starts to contract and go a little bit slower. And one of the things that I noticed that I was doing, exactly like you said, giving it to the 50, you know, a 50 SMA, something like that, giving more room to the trade, letting it breathe. And it would work out a lot more often doing that. But then when I would zoom in, you know, only on them 9-20 trades, and I would get tempted, and this is where discipline comes in, I would get tempted to then talk myself into, let's work this into something else. Like, could this be one of them 50 trades today? Basically, whenever I would give it more room to breathe, it was working out really well, consistently growing great. And then I maybe got a little confident, too arrogant, you know, doing that, and would start to try to force things more, just zooming in too much on the 5 minute and too much on my 9 and my 20.
What I try to think of there is, it sounds to me like you're maybe doing a little bit of trying to have different time periods and different thoughts of what you're going to do incorporated into sort of an overall global strategy that you use for your trading. And what I do is sort of a little different than that. I compartmentalize each strategy just like you would your dogs, for instance. Your dogs have different personality and they all will react different to different situations. And that's kind of the way I look at what I'm doing. I have 9 strategies all totaled. 7 of them or 6 of them are now automated. The 7th hopefully will be automated in the next month, I'm hoping. I'm getting tired of doing it by hand. And the other 2 are so small, they're not really automatable. They're once a week type things that I do. So what I think of them all as sort of your kids or your dogs, you know, they have different personalities. They're going after different objectives. The 9 day short-term index timing is obviously doing very different things than would be my sector allocation program, where I'm timing sector funds. So they're going to have different return streams, different sensitivities. And I think I don't try to combine them together and worry about that at all. I keep them separate. They're their own strategy and they have their own different thing that they're supposed to do. They're going to have their own periods when they have a struggle, and you got to let that happen and not go in there and constantly be trying to force all these things into one global mental strategy that covers everything under the sun.
Yeah, I mean, basically this goes into when I first started several years ago now, but like buy some penny stock or something. And then I would go looking at the news and I would try to convince myself based on some bogus news and that, okay, this is really good. And this is this, try to look at earnings or talk myself into this thing. Like, okay, I'm going to turn this into an investment. And I think a lot of traders, too many traders do that. I had a lot of traders in our room earlier on that they would always say that when I cut my losers, they usually go right back up anyways. So then they would talk themselves into holding those losers for big, huge drawdowns. And sometimes maybe they would get back to green, but other times they wouldn't. And it's just this thing where you have to grow in each category like that. You have to take those things out of there and not let yourself sit in a bigger drawdown. I don't think that a lot of new traders focus much on the drawdown versus when they're sitting in the green and how long they're sitting in it and how far deep they go into this and how deep they're going into this. And I know I sure didn't, but one of the other things I wanted to ask you, Anthony Crudell had said in a tweet recently that he had a heart attack and that opened his eyes and he changed a lot of things in his trading to make it a lot less stressful. Mm-hmm. Have you had anything where your trading has impacted your health in a positive or a negative way?
No. Not really. I guess somewhere way back when, since I was a chemical engineer by degree, I sort of viewed the money management business that I sort of got dragged into. I started out managing my own portfolio. I started managing friends' portfolios. And one thing led to another. All of a sudden, I'm a three-man firm running stock portfolios with like $7 million under management, and I'm doing it part-time. And this is crazy. So I went full-time finally. But I never had any plan originally of becoming a money manager. It just sort of happened. And once I'm in it, now I'm looking at all of this data coming through and I'm realizing that it's sort of like chemical engineering. You bring in chemicals, you process the chemicals, you ship the chemicals. You bring in data, you make trading decisions and you ship out orders. It's the same thing. So I kind of viewed myself not as a trader, but as a businessman who ran a very automated data processing facility. That was kind of the way I looked at it. Now, you know, the Jack Schwagers of the world and people watching this still view me as a trader, and that's fine. I'm okay with that. I don't have to label myself as a trader. You guys can do that for me, but I'm also a winemaker. I'm also a golfer. I'm also, you know, this morning tied the netting on top of our vegetable gardens to keep the sun. Arizona sun will fry your vegetables if you don't give them some shade. So I do a lot of things and I enjoy them all. And it's all part of a normal day here. So I think that's the health thing. By getting out of the mentality of just I'm a trader and I'm labeling myself in life as a trader, and you forget that you're a husband and you're a father or you're a brother, you know, you're a friend. There's so many other things that you can put a label on yourself for and sort of minimize the impact and the stress and the feeling like trading is everything. It's your whole world because it's a very shallow world.
Yeah, I have some health problems that I told you about without going into them much. When I read that tweet, it opened my eyes that, you know, I need to be compartmentalizing these strategies and I need to be just letting the data speak for itself, like you said, and not allowing anything to have so much discretion, I guess, that I can lead myself into those stressful situations.
If I sat there and every time you made a decision, if I asked you, well, give me your mental process. How did you come to that conclusion that you should buy this stock at that point? And you describe for me what went through your mind. And I'm writing this down. And those are data points. And if I have enough of those, I can probably start simulating your decision making using data only and have it spit out the answer that you should logically take, given your own criteria and your own methodology. It just takes the pressure off of you having to be perfect and do that every day flawlessly. The computer can do it easier and faster. So that's kind of the way I look at a lot of the things you can do with computers in today's world, just to try to relieve the pressure from yourself. And that allows you to concentrate on more fun things, creating a new strategy. Or, you know, like I said, you know, every now and again, I like to just leave and go hit some balls for an hour or something. Just get out in the sun and get some vitamin D.
Yeah, I went to school for mechanical engineering and I really enjoyed the advanced math and stuff. But when I got to this, I knew one day I would probably have to bring that into this, but I just really was kind of lazy to do it. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, how much has calculus and stuff been helpful in your training, like advanced math, differential equations?
Integral calculus was the basis for me creating the what I call the ETR, enjoy the ride comfort ratio, which is a measurement of return to risk ratios. To me, it's my best historical simulation return to risk ratios. And that came right out of my integral calculus brain. On calculus, I would say advanced math, probably not as much. Statistics, probably more. Control logic, you know, if you got a heat exchanger and you're measuring the outside, you know, the exit temperature of the chemical, and you realize that we're having a cold night and the temperatures of that process are getting a little cooler and cooler, you have to put some more steam to the heat exchanger to heat things up a little bit. There's an information control loop there that's measuring, just like the thermometer on your wall. It's saying the room temperature is this, I want it that. And when it gets to a certain imbalance, it says, turn on the air conditioning or turn on the heat. And that's kind of the way I look at a lot of trading decisions. You're measuring a lot of noise and you're ignoring, for the most part, most of the noise. And at some point, you can't ignore it anymore and you have to take decision. The setup is there. The breakout is happening. It's time. You know, you got to do something. And I think that if you can do that, you're taking the pressure off of yourself of having to try to take all this noise and just try to do something with it. Just leave the noise there. Don't worry about it. Lay your indicators, manage the data, tell you, hey, it's time for you to get off your duff and do something now.
Speaking of indicators, I wanted to get to this question earlier, but now's a better time than any. I see online a lot of people saying that indicators don't work and everything. And one of the things that I said is road signs don't grab my car either, but they sure are helpful.
That's a good one. Yeah, indicators are measurements of data. They don't by themselves do anything other than create a smoothing function. They take noise and try to minimize the getting you to act on noise. So indicators are meant to try to smooth things out and separate noise from information. That's basically it. It's a mathematical tool or a logical tool, and how you use it is up to you. You could smooth it to the point where you'll never get trades, and you could do the opposite and make it very sensitive, and you'll be going in and out of trades every hour on the hour. It's all a matter of how you want to dial in the tool.
And I do have a lot of these questions here, but one of the ones here is, how important is it for you to know your worth and feel worthy of success to succeed as a trader?
I think it helps to have self-confidence in anything, really, trading or picking up the garbage. Whatever you're doing in life, I think having high self-esteem and feeling like you're putting forth your best effort, I think that's always a good thing. So I would say that's very essential in trading, because I think the markets can tend to push your buttons mentally. And so it has insidious ways. The markets have insidious ways of figuring out where your weaknesses are and exploiting them and making you a basket case if it can do it. And so you've got to have the high enough self-esteem to realize that taking a loss or managing risk is not that you are anything less than a man or anything. You're not being macho enough as a trader. No, in reality, you're just running a numbers game and you're doing your next 1,000 trades and you're basically just operating a plan. You're running a business. And I try not to make it any more exciting than that. I can make trading sound very, very boring and people would wonder, well, why would you do it? Well, because it frees me up. I can do all sorts of fun stuff with my life and it helps pay for it. And I've got to do something with my money anyway. I mean, I've got a decent net worth. What are you going to do? Turn it over to some guy who has no idea what he's doing and who portrays himself as some financial planner. And all he's doing is pushing products from whatever his firm wants him to push, and you don't know any better because you don't spend the time with it. You know, I'd rather take the responsibility myself. If I have my portfolio screwed up, I'd like to be the person screwing it up.
That's amazing. I am really curious, though, about this one. You have a lot of people on one side that say, and I think more new traders do this as well, that they're blaming the markets for everything. Every single trade they put on, any trade that goes against them, they're blaming the markets. And then you have the other side that says there's absolutely no they in the market, that it's just you. You know, do you believe that there are reactions to your orders in the market, and how much of the they factor do you believe or think exists in the market?
Back in my Trendstat days, we had a lot of people because we were getting larger and larger, and we peaked at about 600 million under management. In some markets we were in, people were looking at us and saying, hey, you guys are getting a little large in there. And especially with, in the old days, with the floors and the pits and all that manual paper going back and forth, as opposed to now it's all electronic. There was this constant gossiping about the fact that they are going to take advantage of your stop orders. So I got tired of hearing it all, and I went to the research guys at Trendstat, and I said, okay, guys, this is going to require a little innovative thinking here. I would like to either prove or disprove somehow that they are taking advantage of our orders. So if we have a stop that's right on the number, then what we want our stop to be, and let's try to analyze where our fills, and let's try to do a study of moving our stops to different levels away from where those breakouts would be, so that we would not be so obviously sitting right one tick above the breakout. And the interesting thing that came out of the study is we never ever could figure out that any kind of statistical consistency that anybody was doing anything to our orders, that our orders were just fine the way we were doing them. There was no better idea on how to place those orders than to do it the way we'd always done it. So I have to say, it's your responsibility. You have to take the self-responsibility and say, this is what I'm going to do. And everybody else can do what they want to do. But I think in today's world, with so much automation and so much quick execution capability out there with trading platforms, I don't think most people would care what I'm doing. They really wouldn't. They're all too busy doing their own thing.
I think we can both agree that it's not helpful to blame anything in the market. You know, the man in the mirror is our worst enemy. And basically, like you said, if we stick to the process and we're calculating and working that, creating the best strategies, you know, that's where this starts to shine. What advice would you give yourself starting out as a new trader?
Concentrate on position sizing more than where am I going to buy and sell. If you have a major move of a market, say the Japanese yen is going to go from 150 to 75. If you ride that for the, you know, 18 months or 15 months, you're going to make so much money on that one trade. It's going to pay for a whole lot of losers. You have to have your position sized properly, not too much, not too little. As long as you do that, then you're going to find those big winners, and you're going to have a reasonable exposure to those winners. It's going to make the difference. It's going to, you know, move the car. If you don't get the position sizing, you're going to get more erratic. You're going to potentially put yourself in harm's way. If you're a little bit sized too large, you could have a risk of ruin hit you and wipe yourself out. So very important. Worry about position sizing first.
Would you give yourself any advice or any helpful tips as to how to stick with your winners and not cut them too soon?
Yeah, that was an interesting thing that I did to myself, I guess by accident almost, but I backed into it. I was getting involved in commodities, and we were doing point and figure charts back in those days to save paper because there was no computer. So I was doing all this manually by hand with pencils and papers. And for some reason, I don't know what caused me to do it. I was just sitting there and I had a bunch of charts in my hand. And I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put these down on the floor. I'm just going to lay them out. So now I'm pretty far away. The human eye can only see clear so far. And he got these little X's and O's. But you know, son of a gun, from that distance, I could see every one of the major moves that happened. And it profoundly affected me because it said, hey, Tom, why don't you just step back from this? And if I could catch that one big move in corn and that great move over here in lean hogs, man, that's a lot of money right there. All this other stuff doesn't make a difference. So that kind of the trick that got me into thinking about how do I pick up mathematically that trend and make sure I'm always going to be in on it. And all of the ones that don't come to fruition, that don't pan out, no big deal. Just get out of them, go on to the next trade. Sooner or later, you'll hit one of those big ones. And that's what's happened over my lifetime. I've had a lot of very large, big ones, you know, with moves that happen because I'm a trend follower. And the math, there's lots and lots of different trend following. You mentioned simple moving average, exponential moving averages, Keltners, Dunshans, Bollingers, lots and lots of different ways to do it. And you can get into RSIs and momentum indicators. Those are a form of trend following. There's just a lot you can do. And they all are going to have their little different personalities. They'll have their strengths and their weaknesses from a mathematical viewpoint. Combining a few together, which I do sometimes in my hedging, I like to put the Dunshans, Keltners, and Bollingers together with the same time frame involved with them. So they're all measuring the same period, but they're doing it by their own characteristic math. And where Dunshans can't really adjust at all, and if you have a 21-day Dunshan and you go through a debacle like the COVID crash, the Dunshan stop loss is going to be way up at the top of the peak there for 21 days, and then it'll start coming down fast. Meanwhile, Keltners and Bollingers are going to already be screaming down like a paratrooper going out without the chute open yet. And I think that's kind of what I noticed about different math and different indicators. By combining them together, you get some of the advantages of one offsetting the disadvantage of another, and it makes the combination pretty powerful.
And would you like to get into, basically with entries, how would you say to not try to jump onto a trend too soon, but to also not wait that trend out so much that you're going to be getting in right at the moment that it comes back to retest and put the screws to you just a little bit? I mean, like, how do you balance that with entries?
What I try to do is I like bands like Bollingers or Keltners or Dunshans where you have a line on the top and a line on the bottom. So you got the markets going, you know, noise, 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 noise. I like to try to set those bars in a logical fashion that sets risk levels at a reasonable level, that gives me a reasonable number of trades. And then I like to say everything between those lines, I ignore. It's just noise. And if you do that, and dial it in according to your own objectives for that indicator and for that strategy, I think it's possible to set a level that seems comfortable to you. And at that point, when it gives you that signal, you know, no second guessing now. You've given it the room. You now have a signal. Buy sell engine goes over. Now it's time for action. You don't think, you just do.
Basically, you're saying the same thing, just giving in that room and the proper position sizing with the strategy overall.
Yep. So you're ready to go. You know the position size. You know how much risk you got on the trade because you got the top and bottom lines. And so as far as I'm concerned, the top line could be your entry and your bottom line could be your stop loss if you're going long a stock. Easy to do. Calculate the position size. 437 shares or whatever it is. And off you go. The order goes in. Hey, I have a stop sitting there from the previous day. I'm out on the golf course, the stop goes off. So there's no question that I'm following the strategy. I'm not even sitting there and tempting myself to look at it and second guess it and say, I don't know if I want to buy 437 shares of this XYZ. They've had some problems in the past, whatever, you know, you can talk yourself out into anything. But in reality, if you just have a stop sitting there from your work the previous night, it goes off and you're in the position.
basically, as far as my questions that I had in this list here, mm-hmm. we covered most of them. And I mean, this information is great. I really appreciate you coming on here, taking your time to join me.
What else in your own trading do you think you could have help with?
In my own trading, I mean, I'm just getting to the point of what you're saying right there, that I need to compartmentalize this whole thing. I need to give it the room. I need to take that risk and just set it in stone, not try to tell myself that I can dance with this thing or that I can change and evolve and have discretion within it. Basically, I was lacking discipline in a lot of ways, and I was thinking that I could go ahead and do a little bit of all this at the same time and really do well at it. And sure, in some ways you can, but it's not worth it when it comes time to, because there's always going to be that little move, that one outlier, you know?
Yeah, and when a trade goes against you, let's say it breaks out, and you were talking about how do you get the patience to allow the trade to come back on you a little bit, and then maybe it surges again, you know? I don't worry about it, because unless it's going through that bottom line, I'm just going to keep moving the stops up as I can. If it's just pulled back into the noise zone, it's noise. I don't really worry about it. So it's kind of easy to have a plan and stick to it.
Yeah, one of the cool things about what you were saying about a time frame earlier, I have a friend named Bruce. He's in Special Forces. Mm-hmm. He's doing really well in his military career, and he took the time out to talk to me about his trading strategy. It's a Keltner strategy that has Keltners on multiple time frames.
The thing I like about Keltners, I think he's on a good track there, is because it has a component of ATR, or average true range, for those who don't know the lingo, average true range is a measurement of volatility. It's one of multiple types of measurements of volatility. So therefore, the Keltner bands automatically adjust with changing volatility conditions in the market. And that's what I really like about them, because if markets become more volatile and there's a lot more wide noises, the bands just get farther and farther apart. And when volatility is low, it measures it and starts squeezing down on everything. And a lot of indicators, well, you know, for example, a simple moving average. Simple moving average is going to have one number that measures how many days you're averaging that get into the simple moving average, but there's no adjustment for changing volatility. It is what it is. It's one number. It's a moving average. And so I kind of like the Donchian's measuring the top and bottom over a period of time, looking back a certain X days in history. Well, if the volatility is great, those highs and lows will be farther apart, and they'll be tighter when markets are quiet, not doing anything. So there's this automatic adjusting going on all the time. That makes, I think, the indicator a little bit more robust.
Donchian's is one that I have not used or looked into, so I'm definitely going to do that just when we're done here.
I've used those more than say the Bollinger's and the Keltner's, because it's so simple. The thing you'll have to find, if it's not listed as Donchian, since I actually got to hear Donchian speak back at a conference I attended when I was very, very young, I found happening is sometimes they, on these trading platforms, they'll call it something like price channels is another term for it. So you may have to go through a little indicator sleuthing and figure out how a Donchian channel, go to investopedia.com, figure out how a Donchian is constructed. And it's really, really simple. And then go to your indicator packages on your trading platform, and you might see it listed as something like price channels or something like that. It'll give it some other name, but it originally was sort of named after Donchian because he's the guy that made it so famous way back in probably the early 70s.
One thing that I found is that I really like price action research. That's what I call it, at least. Okay. So I will take a smaller portion of my capital and I will make it to where, you know, I can sort of test the market, see what's going to happen, you know, in a way. But then I'm doing good and making money and letting percentage pay over here. But when I would do that, it was taxing my emotional capital. So even though I'm like, it's not going to hurt me financially to trade however, wherever I want, right, it still has this emotional effect. It would be like, you know, this may be a bad analogy or whatever, but if you were a married man or with a woman and you start talking to another lady, you have no intentions of getting any emotional attachment. But if you start getting too involved, I think you could get emotional attachment. So I think that, and it caused problems. So I think that that's kind of what it is when with this whole, like, you know, trading however, wherever for this price action research. I'm just finding it has to be more like you said, a lot of statistics and a lot more scientific.
Yeah, I find doing statistical studies is an easy way to, in particular, also to use a computer to do that and look at a database as opposed to looking at a bunch of charts and then falling in love with a certain pattern, or you notice this happened over there and it happened over here. And, you know, that's fine. Turn that, what you noticed, into code, and then test an unbiased large amount of data across lots of different markets and see if your idea has any credence to it. And I think then you find that when you have a good idea, it'll jump out at you and it'll be obvious. Jack Schwager had a good term for it. I think he called it 2020 hindsight. The well-chosen example, I think, is the term he uses. So you look at a well-chosen example and, you know, oh, you could have made a lot of money. Yeah, but that that's not a trading strategy. You got to be a little disciplined and go back and crunch some data. And I had to do it by hand. You don't need computer skills to do it. I kind of burned my eyes out early on with a lot of that work. But if you're willing to sit there and crank out a piece of paper and a pencil and a calculator, you can. You don't need to have to do it by computer, but it does take some work.
Well, Tom, I really appreciate you joining me here. It's been amazing. I love your insight, and you know, it's been great talking with you. I really appreciate you joining me.
I had fun too. So let's do it anytime you feel like it'd be useful.
Have a great night. Thanks.
See ya.
Yeah.
Order Phil, check us out.
I know what time it is.
This is the Mighty Soldiers exclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get it. Let's get it.
If you want to take it to the streets, let's get it. If you want to take it to the booth, let's get it. I'm about to take it to the top, let's get it. We ain't never ever going to stop, let's get it. You ain't never heard nobody spit like this. Call the paramedics when I get like this. Front page news when I wreck like this. Hop in the booth and I wreck that shit like,
If you with the squad, then you already know what's up. It be going down, but my account is going up. I'm about to make another 100,000 bucks. Rolling up that chain, I'm about to take another puff.
Hold up. I made a killing, now my pockets got swollen. Independent, now I'm taking over. I'm a lot richer, you a lot broker. I'm a pot smoker, stockbroker. Blowing up like a supernova. On my mama, I was born a soldier. The best in the game, man, I thought I told you. If you want to take it to the streets, let's get it. If you want to take it to the booth, let's get it. I'm about to take it to the top, let's get it. We ain't never ever gonna stop, let's get it. You ain't never heard nobody spit like this. Call the paramedics when I get like this. Front page news when I wreck like this. Hop in the booth and I wreck that shit like, I am unstoppable, I can do anything I ever wanted to. Never did anything they ever wanted me to. Got on my side and I'm not gonna lose and they're not gonna win. I see them, the haters, it's all because I'm getting dollars again. Commas on commas, I'm buying the dip. The market is dropping again.
I can see him hating from the sidelines. If you see a hater, tell him bye-bye. Watch my money grow, 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 grow. And my wife feel like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Somebody better stop me, cause there ain't no competition, and I'm coming for the top position, obliterating the opposition. Every time that I jot it in the composition, everybody wanna stop and listen, cause I bring it to you hotter than the oven in your mama kitchen. I'll be getting hit like a politician. I'ma get bread when you sack like a toilet and Scottie Pippen. Ain't nobody ready for the Armageddon when I pop the clip, and I ain't playing. I'm spraying you brain, I'm bringing the pain like Damon Wayne. You disappear like David Blaine. I'm dropping bombs, Saddam Hussein. Stop and aim, pop you lames and pop champagne. I ain't playing, so stop the games, you know the name. If you wanna take it to the streets, let's get it. If you wanna take it to the booth, let's get it. I'm about to take it to the top, let's get it. We ain't never ever gonna stop, let's get it. You ain't never heard nobody spit like this. Call the paramedics when I get like this. Front page news when I wreck like this. Hop in the booth and I wreck that shit like, Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, man, I'm out.